Republican Congressman Thomas Massie was elected to represent Kentucky's 4th District in 2012 after serving as Lewis County Judge Executive. He's been reelected to the office ever since, and he's earned a reputation for voting his mind, even when that goes against the rest of his party or the commander-in-chief. Now President Trump is throwing his political weight behind challenger Ed Galrein to try to defeat Congressman Massie in the Republican primary on May 19th. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Congressman Massie joins me in this recorded interview to talk about the race and why he's seeking re-election. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me here, Lucy.
A note, Cincinnati Edition invited Ed Galrein to talk with us, but his campaign did not respond to our invitation. So, Congressman Massie, you have served Congress for more than a decade. You've been reelected 7 times. You're very well known in the Commonwealth, but what's less well known about you?
Oh, I try to play a banjo now and then. I grow 15 varieties of peaches on my farm so that I can have a ripe peach from June to September. Each tree gets ripe on a different week. I raise Wagyu cattle crossed with Angus. I call them Wangus cattle. They're delicious. Should I keep going?
That's a pretty good list.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing people maybe have forgotten but might have known, I went to MIT. I grew up in the foothills of Appalachia where I live now. I went to this school that I had never even visited. And my first day there, a car honked at me, and I waved back at it because I thought they knew me. This was in Cambridge, Massachusetts, so I had culture shock. But I thrived in that environment. It was a meritocracy. Nobody cared about what your ethnicity was or your race. It was all about the curve. Everything was graded on the curve, so you learned to respect people for who they were, not where they came from. Unlike the school down the road, Harvard, where most of the kids there, their parents had been there. My parents, my mom was a nurse and my dad was a beer distributor. They had never visited MIT either. So that's a little bit about my background. I have found it's difficult to apply engineering skills to Congress, but I did find one way that I could do it. I built a debt badge that I wear. It's a digital display, no bigger than a name tag, that has the debt, the national debt, constantly updated with a little LED display. And I was hoping to induce some anxiety among my colleagues who don't seem to be concerned about the debt by wearing this debt badge and having the last 5 digits spin so fast that you can't see them. They're just a blur. But it's not worked as well as I thought. Some of my colleagues think it's a step counter. But I try to tell them I can't go 85,000 steps a second, which is how much the debt's going up.
That'd be pretty fast. And you're wearing that badge right now.
I'm wearing it now. I don't leave home without it.
Yeah. So what are your priorities if you are reelected?
The same priorities that I had 12 years ago. That is to defend the Constitution. We swear an oath to that. You know, most Republicans are big fans of the Second Amendment, but I'm also, and I am too, I'm chair of the Second Amendment Caucus. I'm now the co-chair with Lauren Boebert from Colorado. So that's a high priority for me, but I care about all the Constitution. So I'm a big fan of freedom of speech. I think you should be able to say things that are even hateful. I don't think that we should try to regulate speech, whether it's on the internet or on campuses. I'm a big fan of the 4th Amendment. That's put me at odds with a lot of people in Washington, D.C. recently. The 4th Amendment's your right to privacy, and it says that you got to have a warrant and probable cause if you want to search somebody's possessions. Yet the U.S. government is doing that with a program called Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And so I recently stood up, objected to the reauthorization of it, and said we need to put warrants in here. And so we had a debate. I didn't win the day, but they didn't win the day either. It was merely a 45-day extension. And so we'll continue that debate after that. As far as exact policies, transportation and infrastructure is important to me. That's why I've been on that committee since the day I got to Congress, because we have obviously several bridges in the district. We have 3 interstates, I-71, I-75, I-64. And I do believe there's a federal nexus for infrastructure. You know, I complain that our U.S. government's involved in a lot of things that shouldn't be, but transportation is one of the areas where I am active and think the government has a role. I've supported our CVG airport. I know we're in Ohio today, so maybe I'll reiterate or remind you that we have the airport in Kentucky, even if it's called the Cincinnati Airport. It's very important to our district, not just for passenger travel, but it's a big cargo hub for DHL, for Amazon. Amazon lands and takes off 100 planes a day there, and DHL is similar.
You had disagreements with President Trump in his first term, but he did not back a challenger against you back then. Why do you think he did this time?
By the way, he did. The disagreement we had was on the COVID stimulus package. He called me a third-rate grandstander because I said, you know, this is the biggest spending bill in history and we should vote on it. And I did require Congress to assemble and vote on that bill. It passed, but I think it was important that we had a debate. And what I predicted would happen did happen. We've had a lot of inflation because we kept people from working and we printed money and told them to go spend it. Later, that was 2020. In 2022, he endorsed me, called me a first-rate defender of the Constitution. But now it is true that we're crossways on some issues. I've been careful to never insult him personally. He did call me a moron at the prayer breakfast, the National Prayer Breakfast, and I'm just glad I'm in his prayers. I refuse to reciprocate with the personal insults, and I always keep it to policy. So here are the policies that we disagree on, and I think what has encouraged him to back my opponent. The first is the big giant bill that passed. I'm not going to call it beautiful because once something gets above 1,000 pages, it's never beautiful. There were a lot of signature issues in there that are important to me. In fact, I have a standalone bill to eliminate taxes on tips and to eliminate taxes on Social Security. So that was a big incentive that those or forms of those were in that bill. The problem was the bill increased spending dramatically, more so than Joe Biden and Congress together had spent before Trump came in. And I said, if we pass this big bill, we're going to add to the debt and the deficit, and we're going to have higher inflation, higher interest rates, and higher costs of everything. And that is, in fact, what's happened. We've added $2.7 trillion to the debt since we took control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency. And when I say we, I mean Republicans. I think there are occasionally a few other issues. Just one little minor issue called the Epstein Files Transparency Act, which your listeners may have heard of before. I teamed up with a colleague on the other side of the aisle, Ro Khanna, and we led a five-month effort to force a vote on a bill to release those files. And after 5 months, we succeeded. And lo and behold, when I got my bill to the floor, it passed 427-1 in the House, 100-0 in the Senate, and the president, who had previously said it would be a hostile act to back the bill, signed it himself. So I think he probably carries a grudge there on having all those files released. It is true that his commerce secretary was embarrassed. It's clear that Howard Lutnick lied to the public. And there are some other friends of the president who were embarrassed by that. There were national figures. The ambassador from Britain to the United States had to resign. The prince lost his title. The CEO of the World Economic Forum had to step down. So I think that's probably what got me in the most trouble.
So why did you fight so hard to get the Epstein files released when so many Republican leaders and you know, leaders in the party were against that?
Well, what's interesting is so many Republican leaders in the party were for it until we got the White House. You can go back and find J.D. Vance. You can find Kash Patel. You can find the president himself, his own children, talking about how we would release these files when he came into the White House. And what happened was kind of a placebo. Pam Bondi handed out a bunch of binders that really had nothing in them. And then in the summer of the first year, they announced there would be no investigations whatsoever and that there was nothing else in these files. And I knew better because I was talking to the victim's lawyer. And they said, there's a lot more in those files. These survivors, we prefer to call them, have given their testimony to the FBI and they're not releasing that testimony. And there are men who are implicated in that testimony. And so that's when I decided to pursue it. And once I started pursuing it and we had two press conferences with the survivors, many of whom had never had a chance to speak, they came forward, they spoke right there at the steps of the Capitol in the biggest press conference that has happened in the over a decade that I've been there. What happened is my mission changed a little bit. I was in it for the sake of government transparency, but I became more motivated to do it for the survivors, like to get justice for them as I heard their stories.
Well, I want to come back to the legislation that at least the president calls the One Big Beautiful Bill. I know you don't call it that, but an earlier version of that bill would have overridden local zoning decisions mm-hmm. on data centers. What oversight do you think Kentucky state lawmakers should have over data centers?
So the first version of the big bill had a provision that would let data centers ignore state laws. And not just state laws, but local zoning laws. And I think that's wrong. I think that, you know, when you, I call it sorting the smokestacks from the cul-de-sacs, that's not something the federal government can do from Washington, D.C. That has to be up to a local board and a local government. And they, in the first version of the big bill, they had a provision to overrule not just the states, but the local zoning commissions. And Marjorie Taylor Greene and I fought to get that taken out. And it was taken out, fortunately. That issue came up again recently in my Judiciary Committee. We were marking up 8 bills one day in a work session, and I noticed number 6 on the list was to exempt data centers from 8 different environmental laws that they couldn't be sued if they didn't have the permits. You know, even though some of those environmental laws may be onerous, I don't know why you would give an exemption to data centers, but not to the farmers or not to the other industries that could exist. And so I said, this is wrong to give a special privilege to an immunity to data centers. So I tweeted about it. I really, right there in real time, blew the whistle, and they decided to take it off of the schedule that day, and it's not come up since. So when people call me an obstructionist, I didn't obstruct the big, beautiful bill. We made it better by being transparent. And I have obstructed things like special privileges and immunities for data centers. And most recently in the farm bill, they had a provision that was going to give special privileges and immunities. I call it a get out of court free card to Monsanto Bayer, which makes glyphosate. But in order to not look like they were doing something for one company, they said, we'll give every pesticide immunity from all state laws, labeling laws. And that was in the farm bill. So myself and some other colleagues worked hard. We drafted amendments. We got one of them made in order. It forced it to a vote on the floor of the House and took that special provision, it was cronyism really, that would have been extended to pesticide manufacturers at the expense of state laws. We got that removed from the farm bill. Again, you could call me an obstructionist, but the farm bill passed. I actually would argue that I made the farm bill better in the process of that. And I did vote for the farm bill because it has one of my pieces, my signature piece of legislation in it, which is a bill to make it easier for farmers to use a local processor and sell their beef, pork, and lamb directly to consumers.
Another issue you've consistently been talking about. You've spoken out against U.S. military strikes in Iran during President Trump's second term. Explain your position on that.
Well, the Constitution is clear that if we're going to have a war, particularly a protracted war that lasts, and this is in law, if it lasts more than 90 days, certainly, but even a short war requires congressional authorization. Congress should meet, we should debate. We should debate things like, what are the objectives? What's the funding going to be? What are the rules of engagement? Because I think our soldiers and our naval men, seamen, and the Air Force, those folks deserve a clear mission with the tools they need to get the job done and objectives so that when they get done, they get to come back home. And what happens when you kind of do an ad hoc wading into a war where the objectives aren't clear, you don't have a line in the sand, and it's hard, and you get drawn into it like we are right now. And this is unfortunately causing the price of gasoline and diesel to be very high in Kentucky. It's also causing the price of fertilizer to be high. And these temporary disruptions have long tails because right now is when farmers decide how much fertilizer to put on and whether they're going to grow corn, which takes a lot of fertilizer, or whether they're going to grow soybeans. And it takes a while to grow that stuff. Myself, I'm a farmer. I don't do corn and soybeans, but I have hay. And you have to decide in the spring, how much fertilizer am I going to put on? And sometimes you cut corners and you say, it's high this year, so I'll just try to coast off the fertilizer from last year. And I'm afraid there'll be a lot of farms that do that, and there'll be less hay produced this year. It's going to raise the price of virtually everything going forward.
Why do you think more members of Congress aren't insisting on exercising that authority?
I have noticed in the time that I've been in Congress, it becomes a partisan issue. Now, if this were Joe Biden's war, the Democrats would probably be for it and the Republicans would be against it. But because it's Donald Trump's war, most of the Republicans are for it and most of the Democrats are against it. You do have some people who aren't partisans. I fondly call them ideologues. So there are a few ideologues on the left side of the aisle and a few on the right side of the aisle. I know that's supposed to be a pejorative, but I seek out ideologues on both sides of the aisle because I know at any given moment they may break with their party if the party has betrayed the ideas that they campaigned on. So you do have some partisans. Most of the folks are partisan, but there are a few ideologues that will, like, for instance, Ro Khanna worked with me to try to, when Joe Biden was president and there were basically acts of war happening in Yemen, we drafted these same types of proposals and had votes on them. It's hard to get your party to stick to its guns. That would be my case for why people should vote for me. Like, I haven't betrayed the party. I vote with the party 90% of the time, but in the 10% of the time, they've done a 180, for instance, of search warrants on FISA. This is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that was used to spy on members of Congress. It's been used to spy on the general public. The FBI agents have even used this program in conjunction with the dating apps to check out people they see in the dating app. They run them through this database without a warrant. And there was a promise that we would require a warrant when this program expired and needed renewal. And the Republicans have abandoned that promise right now. But we'll see.
I want to ask you more about the campaign that you're dealing with right now. An attack ad airing currently says you voted against finishing President Trump's border wall and that you're essentially soft on immigration enforcement policies. Will you address that for us?
Sure. So if I could make one change about Congress, it wouldn't, you know, there are some fundamental structural things you could change that would make it better. But the one, like time to read the bills and all that, the one thing that would make it better is if we had separate votes on separate topics. So because in my 12 to 14 years in Congress, I have voted against omnibus bills, which the omnibus bill is unfortunately the entire spending bill for the entire year. You can run virtually any ad you want against me. You could say, I didn't vote to pay the soldiers. I didn't vote to, you know, vote for the wall. If there was wall funding in it, you could say that about all of these. But if you look at the instances where we've taken separate votes, I have voted to fund the wall on separate votes. I have voted for immigration reform, like our signature package that we can't get the Senate to bring up. I have voted for that. I have voted for the SAVE Act, which would require photo ID and proof that you're an American citizen before you could vote in a federal election. We're not telling you how you vote, who can vote in your HOA or your school board. We're just saying federal elections. When those are standalone issues, I vote for them. But when they throw all this stuff together, you know, if my opponent had been in Congress and had voted for those omnibus bills, I could give you a litany of bad things that Republicans wouldn't approve of that he had voted for.
You also faced criticism for voting against the bill that funded the Brent Spence Bridge Project, which was something that people have been fighting for and advocating for decades around here. Why did you vote against that?
That was Joe Biden's signature legislation, Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And I have supported funding for the Brent Spence Bridge from the day I got to Congress because that's been a high priority. But again, in that bill, it was kind of a continuation of the COVID, profligate COVID spending. There were a couple bills under Trump in 2020 that spent over $1 trillion. And then Joe Biden continued some of that COVID stimulus. And then the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, although it had meritable things like the Brent Spence Bridge, had a lot of things that weren't infrastructure and a few things that are boondoggles. For instance, this is a very good sounding thing, but bringing broadband to everyone in rural areas, who wouldn't be for that, right? I don't have broadband at my house in my rural area, so I would love to have broadband there. The problem is billions of dollars have been wasted, hundreds of millions in Kentucky, on the promise of broadband to rural areas. And one person actually completed the task, that was Elon Musk with Starlink. And I can tell you it works, and it works fabulously. I have it at my house. And the cost for a Starlink dish is like $600 and then $100 a month. But the cost, if the government wants to try to run a fiber optic cable up your holler or down your road, is in the tens of thousands of dollars. And that's the kind of short-sighted thinking. They precluded Elon Musk from completing those contracts, for instance. Like, you would think, okay, well, if the government has a role in making sure that everybody has broadband, then why not just go get the cheapest solution? Well, there's too many cronies who have their hands in the till in Washington, D.C., the contractors that want to dig the dirt and put these cables underground. And so that's why you had things like that in there. And other things that don't even get close to reaching the definition of infrastructure.
This has been a very expensive campaign so far. I think I saw that as of mid-April, more than $12.4 million in ads have been spent on the race. Big chunk of that are attack ads against you. Are you having to campaign and fundraise harder than ever for this election?
The bad thing about being the nail that sticks up is the force of the whole swamp has come down on me. And it's billionaires. It's not a grassroots funded thing. It's not like a bunch of MAGA, you know, activists have said, I'm going to send $20 to this guy in Kentucky so he can beat Thomas Massey. It's predominantly three billionaires who are upset that I've never voted for foreign aid, particularly foreign aid to Israel. And they're also upset that I vote against the wars. And so these billionaires are funding a super PAC called MAGA Kentucky. They are not MAGA, and they have never been to Kentucky. They're hedge fund managers and gambling magnates. There will be $6 million spent this week on TV and radio and mail. So I apologize to the folks here in Cincinnati who have to watch the ads about this race in Kentucky. And some people ask me, well, surely, Congressman Massey, now you would be against Citizens United, which allows unlimited spending in super PACs. And it's a double-edged sword. Let me tell you why I'm not against it. There are reforms that I could go for. Let me give you a reform. Maybe what if you just said the only money you can spend in Kentucky in a race in Kentucky is from the people of Kentucky? I don't believe that would hinder your First Amendment. But the issue of the super PACs, what's happened is Fox News, which is sort of they've got a monopoly on the screens in a lot of Republican houses, particularly people between the ages of 65 and 75. For the last 18 months, they've not invited me on a single show. And why are they doing that? Because they're afraid if they give me a venue to speak that the White House will shut them out. And they want access more than anything. They need access in this Trump presidency, whether it's with cabinet secretaries to come on their shows at the drop of a hat or to get a special scoop on something. That's what Fox wants. And so to keep that special access, they have blacklisted me. So I can't get on TVs in the living rooms of the people that vote in this election unless I can buy TV ads. Otherwise, it'd be hard to get on Fox. You know, I have to pay to be on Fox now with my ads.
Other prominent Republicans who have disagreed with the president, I'm thinking about Marjorie Taylor Greene, they've decided to retire or not run again. Why are you so determined to stay?
When you go up there and you pound your head against the wall for so long, it's easy to get discouraged. But I still have hope. Look, I got the Epstein files passed 6 months ago when people said it can never be done. I've got my Prime Act in the Farm Bill, and I've worked on that for 10 years. next week, I'll have a piece of legislation on the floor that's almost certain to pass that will make it so that there are fewer false denials in the background check system to exercise your Second Amendment. It's those kind of victories that keep me going. I think it's still possible. And I know I'm giving hope to people. They're hopeful that it's not just red team versus blue team in Washington, D.C. and a partisan exercise every day, that at least somebody will read the bill and make a decision based on what's best for their constituents, not what's best for their party. So I am that person that is standing out. Like I said, the bad thing about being the tall nail is every hammer is gunning for you. The good thing is a lot of people appreciate what I'm doing and they're backing me. So I still have hope and I'm trying to give other people hope.
Well, I've been talking with Congressman Thomas Massie, who has represented Kentucky's 4th District since 2012. Thanks so much for your time today, Congressman.
Thanks, Lucy.
Up next, analysis of the race. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We just heard from Congressman Thomas Massie. We invited his challenger, Ed Gallrein, to be on the program, but his campaign did not respond to repeated invitations. Joining me now to talk about Gallrein and provide analysis and fact-checking for the Republican primary in Kentucky's 4th Congressional District are Kentucky Public Radio Capitol reporter Sylvia Goodman and Kentucky Lantern politics reporter McKenna Horst. Welcome back, Sylvia and McKenna.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I am glad to have you both. McKenna, as I mentioned, we tried to get Ed Gallrein on the program. He hasn't responded to our invitation for an interview. What can you tell us about him and his campaign platform?
Yes. So Mr. Gallrein doesn't do a lot of media interviews, but I did speak to him on Monday in a telephone interview for a story that's coming out in the Kentucky Lantern tomorrow. You know, one thing I think that he has really focused on is his endorsement from President Donald Trump. Trump was looking for somebody to challenge Massie. He vowed, I think, sometime last year in the spring to oust Massie from office. For some votes that are for opposing different pieces of Trump's agenda. And when I spoke with Gallrein and asked him what the number one issue in this race is, he says that it's that these voters in Northern Kentucky, Republican voters, have voted for Donald Trump now 3 times in the presidential elections. And he sees that as a mandate that these voters want Trump's agenda enacted, and he wants to be a congressman that will do that.
Well, Sylvia, McKenna just mentioned that very important endorsement from President Trump, and President Trump was in Northern Kentucky in March. He said at that time that he was looking for a warm body to run against Massie. He praised Ed Gallrein and his what the president called his big, beautiful brain. Did that visit from the president help Gallrein's campaign?
Sure. I think it helped as much as any endorsement could help a candidate. I mean, look, there's a lot of differences between how Gallrein and Massie obviously intend to approach, serving in Congress. So for, you know, Kentuckians who want someone who's going to unequivocally support the president, then Ed Gallrein, I suppose, would be the choice, because Massie has been pretty unapologetic about the ways that he has opposed the president, that he's going to stand by his principles and he will not compromise those, to support President Trump's agenda. Gallrein, like McKenna was saying, says that, you know, Trump has won by huge margins in Kentucky, and that means that a Kentucky congressman should support Trump in whatever he would like to do. While he did, President Trump, I should note, while he did say that Gallrein was a warm body to run against Massie, he also said that he's a straight from central casting kind of comment, you know, that he, you know, Gallrein is a retired Navy SEAL officer. He's, grew up on his family farm. And so, you know, he has those kinds of credentials that appeal to many voters. I do think that presidential visit certainly helped Gallrein, especially among President Trump's most strong supportive base, who showed up in numbers at that rally.
He's also ran for office before. In 24,
Right.
he ran in a contested Republican primary for state Senate, but he did lose that to now state Senator Aaron Reed.
Interesting to note, in that race, he ran kind of more, a little bit more of a moderate in that race, more establishment.
We're talking about the Republican primary in Kentucky's 4th Congressional District. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. McKenna, you mentioned that Ed Gowrein has not done a ton of media interviews. Has he been taking part in debates or forums during this campaign? Does it seem like he's been out talking to voters?
Yes. Yeah, so this has become kind of a big issue between Massey and Gowrein in this race, for sure. We've seen repeated criticisms from the congressman on social media for Gowrein not participating in debates. I think one of the most notable debates that he didn't participate in was the KET debate, which is on statewide public television here in Kentucky. Massey did agree to that and continued on and got about 30 minutes on air to make his case to voters and, you know, in a way, not really not debate against Gowrein, but to criticize him and to defend him from his campaign. Mm-hmm.
Sylvia, have there been forums where the two have appeared together at all?
They have appeared at the same events. Now, Massey would say that's, you know, when I talked to him about it, he would say there's a stark distinction between a forum where, you know, each person gets up and gives a speech and a debate where they get to respond to each other's ideas. So I went to an event this past weekend where in Pendleton County, Kentucky, where, you know, they both gave a speech one after the other, but there was no debate element. And Massey would say that, you know, he wants a debate. He wants something where they get to respond actively to each other in real time.
Gowrein has said, when asked about this by, I think it was in a KET interview, actually, why he's not agreeing to so many of these debates. He says that he is debating Massey every day, meaning that he's on the campaign trail and talking to voters in that way.
Hmm. Well, Sylvia, during our interview, Congressman Massey referenced the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act a couple of times. Can you tell us just briefly what kind of power this gives the federal government, the controversy around it, and, you know, a little bit about the congressman's opposition?
Right. So this is a program that it, basically the vote Congressman Massey was referring to was an extension of this existing surveillance program, FISA, as it's often called. And it basically it's meant for to allow the government to surveil foreigners outside the country and surveil their communications. But it also allows for the searching of data and communications with no judicial warrant on Americans. And it's kind of a notorious rubber stamp for the federal government to spy on those communications. Congressman Massey and at one point President Trump is quite critical of this program.
Okay, so it sounds like that's been a consistent criticism from Congressman Massey.
Yeah. He's called for judicial warrants for the use on Americans. Now, Trump now says it's a different section of FISA than the one that they just renewed that he says was used to spy on him. He claims that he was used to spy on a previous presidential campaign. But yeah, it's kind of a back and forth between Congressman Massey, you know, some Republicans who want less government surveillance and Republicans who say it's for national security concerns.
Okay. Well, we are going to continue our conversation after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. We're back with our fact-checking and analysis of the Republican primary for Kentucky's 4th Congressional District. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. My guests are Kentucky Lantern politics reporter McKenna Horsley and Kentucky Public Radio Capitol reporter Sylvia Goodman. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. McKenna, I asked Congressman Massey about his opposition to President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill, which the congressman refuses to call beautiful. He said he's generally opposed omnibus legislation. Is that true? Is that how he's voted typically during his career, voting against these big omnibus bills?
Yes, you know, I think for him, one of his main platforms is to get rid of a lot of what he calls over-government spending, bloated government spending. I think you even noted in your interview that he's wearing his debt counter that tracks the national debt, and he wears it often in public. But, you know, in one way that Massey has opposed a lot of government spending in the past is in 2020, he attempted to require a House vote to be recorded to take a vote on the very high spending of the coronavirus relief package. And that made him very unpopular on both sides of the aisle at the time. And that's kind of what led to Trump for the first time opposing Massey. But then he later endorsed him in his reelection campaign in 2022.
Well, Sylvia, I also asked the congressman about his priorities if he's reelected. He said support for the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport will be a priority. And he recently requested more than $20 million in earmarks for the airport, but he's opposed earmarks in the past, hasn't he?
Right. Like McKenna was saying, it's kind of all part of his fiscal hawk persona or, you know, his fiscal hawk ideology, that debt clock. Right. You know, he's publicly very loudly opposed earmarks. Specifically, I think he's really taken issue with these giant packages like the CARES Act that McKenna mentioned, like the bipartisan infrastructure bill, things like that, that include these giant, just long lists of funding priorities that, you know, that last for pages and pages and pages. But that being said, right, if you're a congressman who's looking to prove to your district that you can bring back benefits for them, right, like that's how one of the many reasons Mitch McConnell was able to stay in power so long here in Kentucky, because people believed he would bring home the bacon. So if you're a congressman facing a tough reelection campaign, it really doesn't hurt to say that you're going to request money that will go straight to your district.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned that 2021 infrastructure bill that was President Biden's signature legislation. Congressman Massey voted against that. A lot of people around here got angry because it included money for the Brent Spence Bridge, but he did support a $1.66 billion federal grant for the Brent Spence Bridge. So that kind of lines up with what you were just saying there. We did get an email from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, while not located in the Kentucky district in question, I'm watching this race more than the one that is mine. It can be a bellwether for the November election. This election point can be a turning point in many ways for all of us. What do you think about that, McKenna? Do you think a lot of eyes are on this election just to kind of get a feel for what we might see in the midterms in November around the country?
Yes, so absolutely. I think a lot of people are watching it for the November elections. And if there's a way that candidates who oppose President Trump's agenda can make it through and make connections with voters. But I also think a lot of Republicans in general are looking at this election. Massey has gained, he's become basically a household name across the country for leading this libertarian Tea Party movement. And so he has a lot of supporters in that way. He often looks to his grassroots supporters from around the country to help him with this reelection bid. You know, when Sylvia and I were both at the KET debate that I talked about earlier, we both talked to a man who was from Florida who had come up and traveled to Kentucky to campaign for Massey ahead of this primary election. So, and Massey told me that that's not uncommon, that he's heard of volunteers from coming from other states as well to support him here in Kentucky.
Hmm.
And I think that's for a lot of different reasons that there are people jumping on board here. It's partly because of this national ID he's gotten from the Epstein files, and a lot of people who really appreciate his fiscal hawk mentality. And I think that he has just really grown in name ID, and that a lot of some Republicans, especially the more like a specific liberty wing of President Trump's general faction, are hoping that, you know, maybe he'll help shift things on that Republicans will be willing to vote more in line with him if he is proves capable of winning this election.
Well, Sylvia, speaking about that fiscal hawk ideology, during our interview, the congressman said some projects that sound good can turn out really badly, and he pointed to the idea of providing broadband to rural areas. He said that was super expensive for Kentucky. Has it been as expensive in Kentucky as he claimed?
I don't know about some of the very specific numbers that he referenced. You were talking about how much it would cost to put fiber optics down into the hollers and things like that. But it is unquestionable that the Kentucky Wired program has been extremely troubled. It has not lived up to many of the promises, and it's certainly not in the timeline that people were hoping for. It's been tied up in litigation. It's, you know, the budget is continually more expensive than predicted. So he's definitely right that that has been quite the difficulty for multiple administrations, Republican and Democrat, here in Kentucky. And so, you know, that was an interesting idea that he brought up about Starlink. I can't remember that being brought up in the Kentucky state legislature, but it is an example of a project that really has exceeded its the original budget line.
And that idea of letting Starlink and kind of the free market take care of rural broadband seems to be a popular idea in some circles. I saw an article in Reason magazine about that. McKenna, President Trump and RFK Jr. have recently lost the support of some of the so-called MAHA moms, the Make America Healthy Again moms, with policies related to pesticides. Do you think there's an opportunity for Congressman Massey to kind of seize on this moment with his brand of politics?
I think in a way, yes. I think Massey would call himself one of the early supporters of the MAHA movement. He highlights things like at his second wedding that he had last year. I think they drank raw milk, which is kind of a MAHA movement thing in a way to celebrate. And so I think that is part of his base. And we will probably see some voters vote on those issues as well.
We have a caller on the line. Hi, John. Thanks so much for listening and for calling. What's your question?
Yes, I would like the reporters to indicate any conversations they've had with Representative Massey's opponent relative to his stand on such things as free speech and the other issues that Mr. Massey had covered this morning.
Okay. Thanks so much, John. Yeah, Congressman Massey made a point of saying that he supports the Constitution. Sylvia or McKenna, have either of you had conversations with Ed Gallrine about his stance on those issues?
I personally have not had a conversation with him about that.
I haven't either. Unlike McKenna, I have not interviewed Massey in a one-on-one interview.
You haven't interviewed Gallrine.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah. Excuse me. I have interviewed Massey. Yeah, I haven't interviewed Gallrine in a one-on-one interview. I've chatted with him a few times. He hasn't really talked a lot about free speech issues that I've seen. I imagine he, supports free speech issues. He's said that he, supports the Constitution, of course. On some of the issues that, Massey has been big on, for example, we haven't talked about it yet today, but, Massey has stood in opposition to President Trump continuing the Iran war. Gallrine, obviously a veteran, has said that, he thinks that, you should support the commander in chief in his efforts and things along those lines. I'm trying to think if he's touched on any of the other issues. I don't think he's specifically touched on FISA or he's attacked Massey for not voting yes to the One Big Beautiful Bill, specifically pulling out certain things like the tax, no tax on tips, things like that that are, popular among the MAGA base that were in that bill that Massey did vote no on. Although, of course, Massey would say that he does support those bits. He just doesn't like the rest of the bill.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think the takeaway for Gallrine and what he would do in office is that if he's elected, he basically says he will support President Trump no matter what.
Well, thanks so much, John. We appreciate your call. Appreciate your listening. So I also talked to Congressman Massey about how much is being spent on this primary race in Kentucky's 4th District. Sylvia, what do we know about who's funding these PACs, either the ones paying for the attack ads against him or the PACs funding ads that support him?
Right. So Massey specifically pulled out MAGA Kentucky when he was just talking. He mentioned there he is not incorrect that it is funded by several billionaires who have a long history of being pro-Israel. Miriam Adelson. We also have Paul Singer. These are pretty prominent Republican billionaires who also support a pro-Israel mission. As for the PACs supporting Massey, he does have several PACs putting in a lot of money to support him, Kentucky 4th, for example. As far as I'm aware, and I could be proven wrong, I have not seen who the big funders of that PAC are. I don't believe we've seen the FEC filings for that yet. Definitely going to be on a big lookout to see once those are filed, who are the people funding those PACs. I mean, I'm sure there are some billionaires in their ranks as well.
Yeah. McKenna, the Indiana state primary election was earlier this month, and most of the state senators there who defied President Trump's congressional redistricting push lost to candidates the president backed. Could Congressman Massey be the next incumbent to fall?
You know, I think that's a test we're going to definitely see play out as early voting begins tomorrow and into next week on Election Day on Tuesday. You know, I think... it would be an interesting line if that does happen, that Massey is defeated. I think there are some caveats with that outcome. Like I said earlier, Massey has a nationwide profile at this point, basically. So I think that that's helped him get some support through donations, through PACs supporting him in his reelection bid. So it's slightly different than what we've seen play out in Indiana, but I think it's something to definitely watch over the next few days.
Yeah. Sylvia, anything you want to add in the 30 seconds or so we have left?
Yeah, I mean, Massey himself, he calls it a referendum. I think it's also fair to say Gowrine in many ways has also called it a referendum, that Kentuckians voted for Trump and they want a Trump supporter in Congress, versus Massey says they want someone, they want the same person they've always wanted. They want someone who has the principles that Massey carries. So it's really going to be a head-to-head battle here, and we'll just have to watch how the voters come out.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with Kentucky Public Radio Capitol reporter Sylvia Goodman and Kentucky Lantern politics reporter McKenna Horsley. Thank you both so much for your time today and for your perspective. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. And you can watch video of our interview with Congressman Massey on YouTube. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.